Sri Aurobindo, The Synthesis of Yoga. Part 2, The Yoga of Integral Knowledge, Chapter 21, on page 465. The Ladder of Self-Transcendence. The transcendence of this lower triple being and this lower triple world, to which ordinarily our consciousness and its powers and results are limited, a transcendence described by the Vedic seers as an exceeding or breaking beyond the two firmaments of heaven and earth, opens out a hierarchy of infinitudes to which the normal existence of man, even in its highest and widest flights, is still a stranger. Into that altitude, even to the lowest step of its hierarchy, it is difficult for him to rise. A separation, acute in practice though unreal in essence, divides the total being of man, the microcosm, as it divides also the world being, the macrocosm. Both have a higher and a lower hemisphere, the Parardha and the Aparardha of the ancient wisdom. The higher hemisphere is the perfect and eternal reign of the Spirit, for there it manifests without cessation or diminution its infinities, deploys the unconcealed glories of its illimitable existence, its illimitable consciousness and knowledge, its illimitable force and power, its illimitable beatitude. The lower hemisphere belongs equally to the Spirit, but here it is veiled closely, thickly, by its inferior self-expression of limiting mind, confined life, and dividing body. The self in the lower hemisphere is shrouded in name and form. Its consciousness is broken up by the division between the internal and external, the individual and universal. Its vision and sense are turned outward. Its force, limited by division of its consciousness, works in fetters. Its knowledge, will, power, delight, divided by this division, limited by this limitation, are open to the experience of their contrary or perverse forms, to ignorance, weakness, and suffering. We can indeed become aware of the true self or spirit in ourselves by turning our sense and vision inward. We can discover, too, the same self or spirit in the external world and its phenomena by plunging them there also inward through the veil of names and forms to that which dwells in these or else stands behind them. Our normal consciousness, through this inward look, may become by reflection aware of the infinite being, consciousness, and delight of the self, and share in its passive or static infinity of these things. But we can, only to a very limited extent, share in its active or dynamic manifestation of knowledge, power, and joy. Even this static identity by reflection cannot, ordinarily, be affected without a long and difficult effort, and as the result of many lives of progressive self-development. For very firmly is our normal consciousness bound to the law of its lower hemisphere of being. To understand the possibility of transcending it at all, we must restate in a practical formula, the relations of the worlds which constitute the two hemispheres. All is determined by the spirit, for all from subtlest existence to grossest matter is manifestation of the spirit. But the spirit, self, or being, determines the world it lives in and the experiences of its consciousness, force, and delight in that world by some poise, among many possible, of the relations of Purusha and Prakriti, soul and nature. Some basic poise in one or other of its own cosmic principles. Poised in the principle of matter, it becomes the physical self of a physical universe in the reign of a physical nature. Spirit is then absorbed in its experience of matter. It is dominated by the ignorance and inertia of the tamasic power proper to physical existence. In the individual, it becomes a materialized soul, Anamaya Purusha, whose life and mind have developed out of the ignorance and inertia of the material principle and are subject to their fundamental limitations. For life in matter works in dependence on the body. Mind in matter works in dependence on the body and on the vital or nervous being. Spirit itself in matter is limited and divided in its self-relation and its powers by the limitations and divisions of this matter-governed and life-driven mind. This materialized soul lives bound to the physical body and its narrow, superficial, external consciousness, and it takes normally the experiences of its physical organs, its senses, its matter-bound life and mind, with at most some limited spiritual glimpses, as the whole truth of existence. Man is a spirit, but a spirit that lives as a mental being in physical nature. He is to his own self-consciousness a mind in a physical body. But at first, he is this mental being materialized, and he takes the materialized soul, Anamaya Purusha, for his real self. He is obliged to accept, as the Upanishad expresses it, matter for the Brahman, because his vision here sees matter as that from which all is born, by which all lives, and to which all return in their passing. His natural highest concept of spirit is an infinite, preferably an inconscient infinite, inhabiting or pervading the material universe, which alone it really knows, and manifesting by the power of its presence all these forms around him. His natural highest conception of himself is a vaguely conceived soul or spirit, a soul manifested only by the physical life's experiences, bound up with physical phenomena and forced on its dissolution, to return by an automatic necessity to the vast indeterminateness of the infinite. But because he has the power of self-development, he can rise beyond these natural conceptions of the materialized soul. He can supplement them with a certain derivative experience drawn from supraphysical planes and worlds. He can concentrate in mind and develop the mental part of his being. usually at the expense of the fullness of his vital and physical life, and in the end the mind predominates and can open to the beyond. He can concentrate this self-liberating mind on the spirit. Here, too, usually in the process, he turns away more and more from his full mental and physical life. He limits or discourages their possibilities as much as his material foundation in nature will allow him. In the end, his spiritual life predominates, destroys his earthward tendency, and breaks its ties and limitations. Spiritualized, he places his real existence beyond in other worlds, in the heavens of the vital or mental plane. He begins to regard life on earth as a painful or troublesome incident or passage in which he can never arrive at any full enjoyment of his inner ideal self, his spiritual essence. Moreover, his highest conception of the self or spirit is apt to be more or less quietistic. For, as we have seen, it is its static infinity alone that he can entirely experience. The still freedom of Purusha, unlimited, by Prakriti, the soul standing back from nature. There may come, indeed, some divine dynamic manifestation in him, but it cannot rise entirely above the heavy limitations of physical nature. The peace of the silent and passive self is more easily attainable, and he can more easily and fully hold it. Too difficult for him is the bliss of an infinite activity, the dynamis of an immeasurable power. But the spirit can be poised in the principle of life, not in matter. The spirit so founded becomes the vital self of a vital world, the life soul of a life energy in the reign of a consciously dynamic nature. Absorbed in the experiences of the power and play of a conscious life, it is dominated by the desire, activity, and passion of the rajasic principle proper to vital existence. In the individual, this spirit becomes a vital soul, pranamaya purusha, in whose nature the life energies tyrannize over the mental and physical principles. The physical element, in a vital world, readily shapes its activities and formations in response to desire and its imaginations. It serves and obeys the passion and power of life and their formations, and does not thwart or limit them as it does here on earth, where life is a precarious incident in inanimate matter. The mental element, too, is molded and limited by the life power, obeys it, and helps only to enrich and fulfill the urge of its desires and the energy of its impulses. This vital soul lives in a vital body, composed of a substance much subtler than physical matter. It is a substance surcharged with conscious energy, capable of much more powerful perceptions, capacities, sense activities than any that the gross atomic elements of earth matter can offer. Man, too, has in himself, behind his physical being, subliminal to it, unseen and unknown, but very close to it, and forming with it the most naturally active part of his existence, this vital soul, this vital nature, and this vital body. a whole vital plane connected with the life world or desire world is hidden in us. A secret consciousness in which life and desire find their untrammeled play and their easy self-expression, and from there throw their influences and formations on our outer life. In proportion as the power of this vital plane manifests itself in man and takes hold of his physical being, this son of earth becomes a vehicle of the life energy, forceful in his desires, vehement in his passions and emotions, intensely dynamic in his action, more and more the Rajasic man. It is possible now for him to awaken in his consciousness to the vital plane and to become the vital soul, Pranamaya Purusha, put on the vital nature, and live in the secret vital as well as the visible physical body. If he achieves this change with some fullness or one-pointedness, usually it is under great and salutary limitations, or attended by saving complexities. And without rising beyond these things, without climbing to a supravital height from which they can be used, purified, uplifted, he becomes the lower type of Asura, or Titan, a Rakshasa in nature, a soul of sheer power and life energy, magnified or racked by a force of unlimited desire and passion, hunted and driven by an active capacity and colossal Rajasic ego, but in possession of far greater and more various powers than those of the physical man and the ordinary, more inert earth nature. Even if he develops mind greatly on the vital plane, and uses its dynamic energy for self-control as well as for self-satisfaction, it will still be with an asuric energism, tapastya, although of a higher type, and directed to a more governed satisfaction of the Rajasic ego. But for the vital plane also it is possible, even as on the physical, to rise to a certain spiritual greatness in its own kind. It is open to the vital man to lift himself beyond the conceptions and energies natural to the desire soul and the desire plane. He can develop a higher mentality and, within the conditions of the vital being, concentrate upon some realization of the spirit or self behind or beyond its forms and powers. In this spiritual realization, there would be a less strong necessity of quietism, for there would be a greater possibility of an active effectuation of the bliss and power of the eternal, mightier and more self-satisfied powers, a richer flowering of the dynamic infinite. Nevertheless, that effectuality could never come anywhere near to a true and integral perfection. For the conditions of the desire world are like those of the physical, improper to the development of the complete spiritual life.